Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. There is a power struggle in Venezuela with President Nicolas Maduro and the U.S.-backed opposition leader Juan Guaido, who now claims to be the nation's legitimate president. A once prosperous democracy, Venezuela is now a country in crisis. There is widespread hunger and violence. Could things get much worse? A few minutes ago, I spoke with San Antonio Congressman Joaquin Castro about the situation.
The situation in Venezuela has been very tumultuous and intense for a long time. And there's no question that President Maduro oppressed many of his people. And so it's natural that there is a great sentiment for change in leadership. We have to make sure that it's the Venezuelan people that get to choose their next leader in a democratic election. So I believe that we should be pressing Venezuela and other organizations like the OAS to make sure that there is a free and fair election in Venezuela as soon as possible, with international monitoring to make sure that the election is fair.
What about concerns of an all-out civil war and turning a country that is in collapse into one that is in complete chaos?
And I think that's what we want to avoid at all costs. It's just total chaos. I mean, you've already got a lot of strife that's been going on for a while. People being jailed, citizens being hurt in the streets, but you want to avoid a total collapse of the society. And the best way to do that is to conduct an election so that people have faith in the process and they feel as though they had a say in who their next leader is.
What about American troops going into Venezuela? Is that a concern?
I'm strongly against using the military to go into Venezuela.
Is new leadership the answer to Venezuela's humanitarian and economic plight? What would the international response if Maduro holds on to power? Will mass protest this week affect the situation? We invite you to call into our conversation this afternoon as we talk about the future of Venezuela and what it means for us here in South Texas, 210-614-8980. You could also email questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org. We're joined now with Mark Jones. He's a fellow in political science at the Baker Institute for Public Policy and Latin American Studies and professor of political science at Rice University. And Kirk Vilent, he is a professor in the Department of Government at the University of Texas at Austin. Welcome to The Source. It's great to have you both. So, Mark Jones, what is your take on what's happening right now with Venezuela?
Well, the Venezuelan case is a tragedy that's been unfolding for quite some time. Congressman Castro, you know, I think rightly criticizes the Maduro regime, but I think he has to remember that many congressional Democrats supported the Chavista regime for quite some time. And as recently this past summer here in Houston, our mayor, Sylvester Turner, a Democrat, supported our allowed Venezuelan Sitco to fund our Freedom Festival, which was kind of ironic. But now we're certainly in a time where I think while it's risky to certainly cut off Venezuela's oil exports, it's a step that probably needs to be taken because otherwise we're just watching the country slide further into collapse with misery, starvation, and millions fleeing the country due to political oppression and the lack of food and basic health services.
Kurt Vilent at UT Austin, is what's happening in Venezuela? Are you concerned?
I'm highly concerned because it is a tremendous humanitarian catastrophe. The country is in a disaster. And the recent move by the opposition leader Guaido, who declared himself the interim president, really brings the situation to a head politically and in many ways forces a confrontation with the established regime that is very unlikely to go very easily. So it's a very dangerous situation. The recognition of interim President Guaido by the United States involves the United States directly. The conflict over diplomatic personnel means that this could really turn into a serious, dangerous confrontation.
What would that confrontation look like? I mean, would it be contained in Venezuela? Would we see it spill out? Would we see refugees coming to the United States? I mean, could they? And we don't do it refugees anymore in this country. So what role should we have in that, Kurt?
It's very difficult to say what the United States can do because the Venezuelan regime clings to power with all means. And the United States clearly would like to see and promote a regime change, but the direct leverage that the United States has is very limited. The humanitarian catastrophe in Venezuela has led to huge refugee flows to many neighboring countries. And as I say, the conflict over the diplomatic personnel could heat up. And I do not know what the United States would do if, for example, the Venezuelan government really was starting to harass the diplomatic personnel that the United States has inside the country.
Let's go to a caller. The number is 210-614-8980 with Vree. Vree, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, I was just wondering if you guys thought that the sanctions themselves might be contributing to the disorder in Venezuela.
All right. Thank you, Vree, for that question. Mark Jones?
Well, up until now, I don't think they have, because they've been targeting mostly the Chavista regime and members of the Maduro administration. However, since yesterday, the U.S. decision to essentially stop Venezuelan exports of oil to the United States, which is where Venezuela gets about 75% of its hard currency, that's going to have a dramatic effect. And as Kurt mentioned, we're really forcing the issue to a head right now. And there's a real potential that things are going to get much worse before they get better, because once those sanctions really go into force, which will be a couple of weeks, the Venezuelan government will be essentially without revenue, which means it won't have money to pay off the military, to buy food, to buy medicine, and the system will begin to collapse.
And the United States has been supplying the hard currency, and if Venezuela sells that oil to other places like China or India, they don't get hard currency in return. That just goes towards paying off debt. So what does that mean?
Well, a large proportion of Venezuelan oil exports that aren't to the United States are essentially paying back loans to the Chinese and the Russians. So they aren't getting hard currency. Now, the oil is a global commodity, so they will be able to sell some of their oil to other markets. But the Venezuelan oil is a very heavy crude, and it's not all refineries can handle it. Two of the refineries that are well equipped to handle it are the Citgo refineries in Corpus Christi and Lake Charles. Other countries are not going to be able to buy that oil, or if they do buy it, they're going to ask for a steep discount. And it also logistically will take at least a month or two to find those new buyers. So while Venezuela won't see a complete loss of the revenue from the oil they've been exporting to the United States, they are going to see a significant drop. And this is a country that already doesn't have enough money to feed its population or provide even basic medical care.
And Mark Jones, what would happen to those Citgo refineries in Corpus Christi and Lake Charles? Or are they going to still function, or would they, lay people off?
What they're probably likely to do is they're going to have to try to look for other sources of heavy oil. The tar sands in Canada have been a source, but with WTI down at about $51, $52, they haven't been producing. They're probably going to slow down their refining process, which means we may see a small uptick in gasoline prices, especially in the Texas and Louisiana region.
Kurt Vilund, Russia is involved also in Venezuela. What are their interests?
Well, their interest is essentially to maintain a thorn in the United States' side and prop up the Maduro regime just kind of as a counterbalance and potential pressure for U.S. actions in other regions. And so they are essentially kind of a nuisance factor in the whole story. They don't have a very clear direct interest. It's essentially to poke the United States.
And so we have a statement from Kenny Montgomery. He's an active member of the Venezuelan Association of San Antonio. And here's a quote. I think that if in the next days the coerced military forces continue supporting the narco-state dictator Maduro, the international community needs to react proactively and intervene. This humanitarian and refugee crisis of Syrian proportion will not only affect tremendously the entire region, but a lot of countries and politicians in the U.S. and the world. So it seems like he's saying there's going to be a catastrophic impact on the population in Venezuela. But how is that avoidable? Because it's happening right now, Mark Jones.
It's going to be difficult because, as I think as Kurt mentioned, the Chavista regime knows that their backs up are against the wall. Their access to revenue via the selling of illicit narcotics or via corruption would be closed off were they to leave power. And there's a great likelihood that they would be tried for crimes against humanity or at least for criminal charges. And so they're really going to resist to the bitter end. And with the United States now cutting off of Venezuelan oil imports into the country, in a short period, Venezuelans are going to face even more severe food crises and medical crises. And with the Maduro administration's refusal to allow aid to arrive in the country, we're going to see really potentially high levels of increasing starvation and people dying from simple illnesses, as well as a continued outflow of adding to the already 4 million Venezuelans out of a population of about 28 million who have left the country. So perhaps 1 to 2 more million leaving over the next few months if things don't get better.
And Kurt Weiland, where are these people going? When they leave Venezuela, where do they end up?
They go to Colombia, they go to Brazil, they go to Ecuador, to Peru. I mean, many Latin American countries have accepted very significant flows of refugees, and it has led to a considerable pressure on economic social situation in neighboring regions, for example, in the north of Brazil, has led to some discussion in those countries whether they can absorb all these refugees. And so it has led to very serious problems in other Latin American countries as well, which helps explain why those countries finally got around to putting pressure on the Maduro regime. Latin American countries are by nature reluctant to interfere in the domestic affairs of other countries, but in the last couple of years, in light of those refugee flows, Latin American countries have finally taken a more active role and tried to push for a regime change in Venezuela. Can I make one more comment?
Sure, in 20 seconds.
Yeah. The U.S. sanctions, I think, have had an unintended negative effect because they have made it clear to the Maduro regime that if they lose power, they might end up in a federal prison in the United States. And so that has reinforced their determination to cling to power by all means. And all so right. You see a negative consequence of that sanction.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. The number to call in, if you've got a question or a comment about what's happening in Venezuela, the number is 210-614-8980. Should the U.S. get directly involved in figuring out who the president of Venezuela is? The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. President Trump's decision to recognize Venezuelan National Assembly Speaker Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim president is an audacious move. It is more likely to make a bad situation worse than better. That's the opening line from an article written recently by Mark P. Jones. The article is titled, Trump's Big Venezuelan Gamble, How It Could Backfire, Hurting South Americans and Americans alike. We're talking about that this afternoon here on The Source. You can call in with your questions and comments. Number is 210-614-8980. And Mark P. Jones is on the line with us. He's at the Baker Institute for Public Policy. He's a chair of the Latin American Studies, professor of political science at Rice University. So the takeaway is in your article, Mr. Jones, is that this is a big decision, a big gamble that President Trump is taking, but maybe it is one that he had to take?
Right. I think when we watch the situation in Venezuela, for over 2 years, we've been thinking that things would just get bad enough that the Maduro regime would somehow leave power or be forced from power. But I think over the past year, it's become increasingly clear that they're not leaving power, and that part of the Maduro regime's actual policy is to starve out its population and deny basic health care to anyone who does not support the regime, trying to either drive them out of the country or keep them in such a state of, I guess, stupor or desperation that they don't have time to protest. So while this gambit by President Trump could very well crash and burn and lead to even greater civil conflict and problems in Venezuela, it was a step that probably was worth taking simply because had it not been taken, we would have just continued to watch Venezuela slide into further and further devastation. And as I think Kurt mentioned earlier, create a tremendous refugee problem for neighboring Colombia, as well as Ecuador, Peru, and Brazil, and increasingly in the United States, where we now in the United States have tens of thousands of Venezuelan political refugees who are seeking asylum.
There were some tense hours there after the United States announced it was going to back Juan Guaido as president, And then Nicolas Maduro announced that we're cutting off diplomatic relations and that all American diplomats needed to vamoose from Venezuela. And then they said, we're not leaving. And there were questions like, will there be a hostage taking? Well, what will happen? It could get really tense. And Maduro backed down. But it seemed like we were playing fast and loose with the lives of the people who work at that embassy. I mean, was this a serious situation, Kurt Vilen at the UT Austin?
It was a serious situation and has not been resolved. But, I mean, the United States, after not recognizing the Maduro government anymore and giving its recognition to the interim president Guaido, felt that they couldn't accept the cancellation of diplomatic relations by President Maduro. And so I think it was something that was unavoidable once that step was taken. The United States has, in some sense, surprisingly taken a much more active confrontational role after not getting so much involved before. And so in some sense, the United States now has to follow through and try to push this to the conclusion that we would all want to see. But it's a risky and it's a dangerous move.
What is that conclusion that we would all like to see?
The removal of President Maduro. And as Professor Jones said, he's not going to go on his own. So, I mean, I think what essentially everybody is trying to do, put so much pressure on the Venezuelan regime that it somehow fractures internally, that some group of especially military personnel say we cannot support this anymore, with the amnesty offer by the self-declared president Guaido. He has tried to win over fractions inside the military, and I think that would be the only really realistic exit solution for Venezuela. Nobody else can make Maduro step down on his own. It would have to be an internal break in that coalition that clings to power.
And Mark Jones, the United States has a long history of interference in Latin America, and frequently U.S. interference is not welcomed. Is this a different type of situation?
Well, I think right now the United States has probably done as much as it can do. And if it pushes even any further through any type of direct intervention, that would backfire. It's already very difficult for many of the governments in Latin America that have come out against the Maduro regime, such as in Argentina and Chile and Paraguay and Peru and Brazil, because significant opposition groups in those countries are supporters of the Maduro government, or at least are very opposed to any support for U.S. efforts. And so if the United States gets any more involved than it already is, that's going to cause many Latin American countries to step back, not step forward. And it's going to make it even more difficult for countries that are sitting on the fence, like Mexico or Uruguay, to get involved. So what we really need, as was mentioned, is a split within Chavismo, hopefully by which Juan Guaido can cut a deal with the military and some elements of Chavismo to form some type of national coalition. But I also think what we can't sort of focus in on somehow that we're going to have these magic elections in the next few months and that's going to resolve everything, because the electoral system in Venezuela is completely corrupt and under Chavista control. What we could probably hope for now is some type of government of national reconciliation that involves Chavistas as well as members of the opposition, that with international guidance and help can set the stage for elections maybe sometime in 2020.
Let's go to the phones with Julia. Hi, Julia. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. Going back to one of the comments from one of your person who said that there should be an intervention, a military intervention. I agree with that person because we just had a celebration of the remembrance of the Holocaust a few days ago. And as neighboring countries, we just cannot just look to the side. I think we need to look what is going on to avoid more bloodshed. I mean, as it is right now, so many people have died, and this could have been already avoided. So I think there has to be a military intervention if the situation doesn't get resolved soon. And not just by the U.S., it's just by all the neighboring countries in Latin America.
All right. Thank you, Julia. I appreciate that. Mark Jones, what about the Venezuelan military? If the U.S. went in with our military forces, would we be, shooting at those guys?
We would. And I think the risk is civilian casualties and then it backfiring and having blowback in Latin America for that. Unfortunately, military intervention is very tricky. The United States is actually capable of doing it, but does not want to get involved and create the optics of U.S. intervention, let alone have civilian casualties. And none of the Latin American militaries have the capability nor the desire or will to intervene in that capacity. I suspect, though, that if we did have U.S. intervention, it would be very quick and very short, because the only people truly supporting the Chavista regime are the generals who are benefiting from their drug deals and other corruption, and most of the troops would defect en masse. But I don't see the United States pulling the trigger on actual intervention unless U.S. Diplomats are threatened.
And let's go to Brady on the phones. Hey, Brady, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. I just wanted to mention that I think America is in no position to judge the democratic process in Venezuela when Maduro won 67.8% of the popular vote and Donald only won 46%.
All right, Brady, thank you for that. But the numbers that Maduro has, their suspect, Kurt Weiland?
Totally suspect, because you can't only look at the electoral result. You have to look at the context in which an election is held, whether it's a free and fair election, where the opposition has ample opportunities to organize, criticize, mobilize, or whether, like in Venezuela, where the voters are intimidated. As Mark mentioned, the Maduro regime has used the poverty to essentially keep many people dependent on their food handouts. They are not independent voters. The opposition, so many opposition leaders have been put in jail, have been driven out of the country. The press is not free. So the setting in Venezuela is such that nobody can talk about a democratic election that happened last year. And President Maduro has zero legitimacy as a leader in democratic or electoral terms. The result as such isn't decisive. Otherwise, we would say that Saddam Hussein with 99% was more democratic than Donald Trump. So.
And there is a provision in the Venezuelan constitution that would allow the head of the assembly to become president if there was evidence of mass corruption, Mark Jones.
Yes. I mean, what's difficult is the constitution really isn't worth much in Venezuela today. It's all power politics. And especially since the final arbiter of the constitution, the Venezuelan Supreme Court, is 100% under the control of the Chavista regime. So this is one that, you know, Juan Guaido has been able to use that codicil to claim power, and it's provided a platform. But the real fight will be done in actual hard knuckle politics, not based on constitutional law.
So next door to Venezuela is Colombia. They had a 50-year-long civil war. Is that the concern, that there could be a civil war in Venezuela that would be a troubling long-term economic drain and also provide cover for the drug cartels? Kurt?
I doubt that there would be a long-term civil war. What is well possible that the Maduro regime has some support among organized collectives at the local level, kind of militias, gangs. So if there were a collapse of the Maduro regime based on an internal fracture of the ruling coalition, or especially if there were an external military intervention, some of those people could fight on as guerrilla forces. But I doubt very much that that would be a long-term problem, because the Maduro regime has been so discredited. I think after a relatively short while of offering armed resistance, they would fade away. And I don't think that would be the long-term problem that we had seen in Colombia.
And what do we know about Guaido? What kind of, what is his political philosophy? Mark Jones?
He's from the more conservative wing of the Venezuelan opposition, pragmatic, but also not as pragmatic as some of the centrists, and therefore probably less willing to cut deals with ex-Chavistas, or Chavistas themselves. Although at this point, I think the pressure on everyone in Venezuela is to try to find some type of consensus whereby members of the opposition, like Juan Guaido, as well as more pragmatic members of the Chavista regime, can try to form some type of roundtable where they're able to broker the country, some type of peace settlement, to get the country back on the track of development. Because it's difficult to overstate the humanitarian catastrophe that we've seen in Venezuela. Only in countries that are experiencing war do you see a fall in the standard of living and a rise in the case where 80% of the population now lives in poverty, and 4 million out of like 28 million have departed.
All right. Mark Jones, political science at professor at Baker Institute for Public Policy, and Kurt Vilen. He is a professor at the Department of Government at the University of Texas at Austin. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.